This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Zambia recovers millions in stolen assets, Sudan breaks diplomatic ties with Chad, and a presidential runoff is likely in Zimbabwe. That's all on today's Africa Update. For more, we've got Amira Wood. She's co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. It's great to see you in person, Amira.
It's a joy to be with you
in the same room, Farai.
Well, I have to say also that you look just fabulous. We don't usually get to see you because I'm not usually in D.C., but you've got on an amazing turquoise outfit. So that's my television portion of this. But let's start in Zambia. The government has recovered money and assets worth nearly $60 million that it says were stolen during the rule of former President Frederick Chiluba. And he served two terms as Zambia's president from 91 to 2001. Those assets were bank deposits and an apartment in Belgium. So how significant is this?
Well, it is huge, Farai, because this is starting now a pattern where African leaders are held accountable by their own people. The assets that were taken from the country are actually traced and repatriated. They are returned to the people. And this is an extraordinary step forward for African countries and for the international community.
Is President Chiluba facing any legal charges?
Well, there are legal charges within a UK court. There are charges brought up actually for these for the recovery of these stolen assets and for corruption charges as well. So it is an ongoing case and an ongoing issue. But this return of now over $40 million is a huge step forward.
So there's a new United Nations Convention Against Corruption. What is that?
It is the first internationally legally binding convention that says countries around the world have the right to go after funds that belong to the people that were actually put in foreign bank accounts and in other assets and can go after, trace, and return, repatriate those funds to the country, return the funds to their rightful owners, the citizens of those countries. So it is a huge step forward. It came about because of the organizing of human rights activists, especially Nigerian human rights activists, that really went after the stolen wealth from Nigeria, especially in the Abacha regime time. And it is now this binding international rule that says that countries around the world can hold people accountable for irresponsible activities.
Now, let's talk about the latest political news from Zimbabwe. We've been tracking that for a while. Over the weekend, opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai announced that he's going to take part in a presidential runoff against incumbent Robert Mugabe, the president. And speaking from South Africa, Tsvangirai vowed to return home shortly to take part in the second round of elections.
I intend to return to Zimbabwe within the shortest period of time, having taken into consideration the feasibility on the ground. I shall return to Zimbabwe to begin a victory tour. Some might say this term victory is cold in colors given the hardships endured by the people. But the people are victorious, and they are being punished for their victory. We must free ourselves from those who would steal victory from fellow brothers and sisters by using guns, sticks, screwdrivers, and bicycle chains.
So we've heard about some of the election-related violence, and for weeks now, Tsvangirai has maintained he won an outright victory. The Electoral Commission says while he won the most votes, he fell short of a majority, and by law, he's got to do a runoff. So are you surprised by his announcement?
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth. Will there actually be a runoff? Will there be an outright understanding that Tsvangirai did win in the election? And so it's been a five-week standoff. What will happen next in the Zimbabwean elections? And it seems that, you know, the decision has been made by the Movement for Democratic Change to go forward with this runoff election and to respect the standing and the ruling of the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission.
Did he really have a choice?
Well, many say he didn't, right? Many say that in order to keep especially the confidence of the people and the confidence of the international community, that he had to go forward with a process that was seen as the next step, that was seen as a commitment to the rule of law within Zimbabwe.
Now, what kind of demands is he making in terms of how that runoff election should unfold?
Well, I think there are a lot of issues now as to when the election will take place. And you know, Morgan Tsvangirai has said it should happen within this coming month. 24 days would be ideal. But there are others that say, well, according to the Constitution, it could be up to 60 days, so 2 months before this runoff takes place. And we know, well, there have already been numerous reports of violence and intimidation tactics and just outright abuse, particularly of supporters of the MDC and Movement for Democratic Change. And so it is really troublesome to think that there could be an even further extended time period before we know who at last is the president of Zimbabwe.
Let's move on to Sudan. Last week, the Sudanese government launched airstrikes that hit a school and killed 13 people. In response, rebels attacked the capital, Khartoum. Now, let's begin with the bombing in North Darfur. Why was this area targeted? Do we know?
Well, Farai, we know that it's been now 4 years of attacks, of basically the Sudanese government deciding that people on that land in Darfur really had no right to political participation, to economic independence, and has systematically targeted those communities to push people off their land, to push them both across the border into Chad, but also into internally displaced people's camps. So it is staggering. 400,000 is the figure that people toss around in terms of those who are made homeless by this violence and actually targeted by the violence. And so we see this as just the latest, this aerial bombardment, actually Antonov missiles attacking a school, you know, killing, it said, 14 people, seven of them children. This is just the latest in the series of attacks that target civilians in Darfur as this crisis, again, continues unabated.
So rebels attacked the capital, Khartoum, in retaliation, and then Sudan cut ties with Chad, claiming Chad was complicit in the rebel attack on Khartoum. So what's the relationship between Chad and Sudan?
Well, it's been a difficult and complicated relationship. So, you know, there were wonderful photos taken about 2 months ago when Chad and Sudan signed these new diplomatic arrangements that there would be a sort of a commitment made for peace on both ends. And that was wonderful. They signed it in Senegal at the Islamic Conference and everyone applauded and then went back home to further tensions. What has happened is you have had both governments accusing the other of supporting rebel movements. So you have the government in Chad accusing the Sudanese of supporting rebels there, trying to oust the Debe government in Chad. And then on the other side of the border, you have the government in Sudan accusing the Chadian government of supporting the rebels that have attacked now in Sudan.
All right. One last topic. We're going to the Horn of Africa. Tens of thousands of Somalians hit the streets to protest soaring food prices. At least 5 people died in those demonstrations. And some stores refused to accept banknotes because they feared some of them were counterfeit. So the UN says half of Somalia's 7 million people are facing famine. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from Danny Glover, actor and activist. He went to Congress to talk about this. But the average income in Somalia is under $1,000 a year. What kind of pressure are we really talking about here?
Well, what you're talking about is political pressure primarily. Let's remember Somalia had a government that for the first time in 15 years brought peace, brought stability. And the U.S. decided that because they had Islamic in their name, it was the Union of Islamic Courts, that government had to go. And so the U.S. orchestrated the ouster of that government from December 06. So from December 2006 till now, 15 months, we have had chaos in Somalia. And the result of that chaos is a human suffering that is taking a heavy toll. There are an estimated 1 million people forced out of their homes in Somalia, well over the estimates from the Amnesty International report just this past week was that 6,000 people have been killed in the last 15 months. Other estimates are much higher. The Somalis say the number is closer to 10,000. So what you have is a humanitarian catastrophe because of the political crisis caused by the U.S. ouster of a Somali government.
Now, we should say that the U.S. and others did accuse the Union of Islam, the Islamic Courts government of, you know, perpetrating atrocities. So there's a difference of opinion on that. But now that there is this famine looming, do you think that the U.S. and international community will come together to help out?
Well, the issue with the food crisis is a global issue. And clearly what's at stake is that the especially large businesses here in the U.S. and in Europe that have dumped their agricultural products on markets around the world have to curtail that action. The subsidies to those large businesses has to end. So in the end, resolving the food crisis will take longer-term structural change.
All right, Amira, always great to see you.
Oh, the time goes so fast. Thanks so much, Farai.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she joined us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C.